Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the DD Geopolitics live stream. I always say podcast. It's not a podcast anymore. We've graduated. I am your host, one of your hosts, Sarah, and your other one is, again, playing Carmen Sandiego, but we won't reveal where he is, but maybe on Wednesday we'll be able to. How are you?
On Wednesday we'll be able to, for sure, for sure. And greetings to everyone. Welcome to all of our viewers and subscribers.
And we have a pretty packed episode, a potpourri, if you will, very mixed bag. So I'm going to dive right into it. And I'm going to get the yucky stuff out of the way first. I try not to do too much gossipy stuff on this show because I don't really like it. And B, I don't really think it adds to the conversation. But I think this one, I'm going to be able to manipulate it and make it political. So widow of under 2 months, Eric Kirk, was at a TPUSA event this week doing her best efforts to wipe away tears or manufacture them. And, well, I would say acting very inappropriately, running around in leather pants.
Very Christian.
Very trad wife. That really went out the window really fast. But this appearance is making a lot of waves. You guys have probably already seen it. It's also in the thumbnail. And I stopped paying attention about Erica around like September 14th because, you know, I'm a very intuitive person and Chai's in the stream. I can see Chai in the chat. Well, on the 13th, we clocked her and I could see the writing on the wall. I was like, if I start saying negative things about this woman, they're going to drag me through the mud. Like they were like crucifying people for saying anything negative. So I was like, all right, I'm just not even going to pay attention to this woman because it's clear something's not right. So this week I saw the images of the TPUSA event come out. I said, all right, let me check out what this, because everyone was saying, like, finally I saw like the floodgates are open and everybody's like, this woman is so weird. So let's take a look at just how weird this has gotten.
No one will ever replace my husband. No. But I do see some similarities of my husband in JD and Vice President JD. Yes, I do. And that's why I'm so blessed to be able to introduce him tonight. Because he understands the fight that we're up against. And he can articulate that in a way that transcends. He's an amazing man.
Okay. All right, a little weird.
Maybe. A little weird.
Trying to be nice. Maybe she's a little sedated.
Little weird.
Okay, okay. All right, let me build it. Let me build this up a little bit. I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. She's a grieving widow in leather pants. Then here comes this. This is the thing that made all the waves. Meow.
That hand placement.
His or hers? Because I'm looking at hers.
Yeah, hers.
That's a very familiar place to put your hands for a woman, in a man's hair.
No, like right behind the head. I mean, that's like you're ready for the makeout session. That's like, you know, caressing and like ready for love, you know. God damn it. Come on.
But let's give Erica the benefit of the doubt. She's handsy with everybody.
Yeah, all the more reason to be suspect, I think.
Really? Okay, I think maybe. Yeah. All right.
Well, first of all, listen. You played the game. Oh, I'm traditional. Blah blah blah. I mean, I don't see traditional women doing that to random men or men that they're not married to.
Well, I see in any case, women all grieving.
Not to mention that in my culture, she'd be wearing all black, still wailing, and you know, throwing her hands up and beating her chest, and you know, gnashing of teeth and all that shit. But right. All that was needed was a slap in the ass, and that would have confirmed it. We didn't get that, but it was borderline.
Very weird, right?
Very weird.
Very weird. Don't forget that J.D. Vance and Usha were the first people to respond to the death of Charlie Kirk. They're the ones that ran out there. I don't know. Erica is just off. No one can replace my husband, but I see a lot of him in J.D. Vance.
Who says that still within the mourning period? Doesn't make sense.
I'm not even 2 months out from this man's death.
Yikes. I don't know. I'm seeing some crazy shit online. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's getting wild out there. I'm trying not to be disrespectful, but it's just off. And then, I'm going to use this to segue into J.D. Vance, who's also just strange. Here he is, Field. I want your opinion, because I took not a grave offense. I'll explain after. But this is him fielding a question about Usha and her faith. This is very strange.
Everybody has to come to their own arrangement here. The way that we've come to our arrangement is she's my best friend. We talk to each other about this stuff. So we've decided to raise our kids Christian. Our two oldest kids who go to school, they go to a Christian school. Our 8-year-old did his first communion about a year ago. That's the way that we have come to our arrangement. But thank you. My 8-year-old was also very proud of his first communion. Thank you, guys. I'll tell him that Ole Miss wishes him the best. But I think everybody has to have this own conversation when you're in a marriage. I mean, it's true for friends of mine who are in Protestant and Catholic marriages, friends of mine who are in, you know, atheist and Christian marriages. Do I hope eventually that she is somehow moved by the same thing that I was moved in by church? Yeah, I honestly do wish that, because I believe in the Christian gospel, and I hope eventually my wife comes to see it the same way. But if she doesn't, then God says everybody has free will. And so that doesn't cause a problem for me. That's something you work out with your friends, with your family, with the person that you love. Again, one of the most important Christian principles is that you respect free will.
You've been married for 11 years. Chai brought up a good point. He called it an arrangement, our arrangement.
Arrangement.
Whatever. First of all,
it was an arrangement.
A Catholic married to a Hindu is not even remotely the same as a Catholic married to a Protestant.
No, both Trinitarian Christians, like, it's A-okay, really.
To a really devout Christian, like, I don't feel this way as a Christian, but to a very devout Christian, they would look at a Hindu like a demon. So,
yeah.
You're married for years. And in front of a crowd, you say, do I hope one day my wife will convert? Yes. What the hell?
I mean, that's... It almost, you know what? I feel like a lot of these politicians basically use their marriages as sort of a staging ground for political points. And in this case, he actually threw his wife under the bus to score some points with the Ole Miss crowd.
Exactly.
And that was, you could tell her discomfort there. I don't know if you can watch some body language.
That's not her. That's not Osha. I thought it was, but that's not her.
That's not her. It looked like her, but it wasn't her from a distance.
Very well, way to be racist, Chris. We're going to get banned in India again. Good job.
That's okay. But listen, but who the hell was that woman that was just there? Were they just pointing a camera at a random woman?
No, I think she's the one who asked the question, because the Hindus are actually kind of concerned about this. I actually started discussing this because...
Well, she didn't look happy. I don't know either. I don't know what the hell...
They don't look happy, but put your tinfoil hat on with me for a second. J.D. Vance ain't getting elected in 2028 with no Indian Hindu wife.
I mean, that's true. I mean,
not with this current climate, what we've got going on right now.
But who knows? There's a Hindu Christian Zionist alliance. They're doing, who knows what's going on? You saw that, the conferences and shit like that. Right. I don't know what's going on. You know, there's a lot of money and a lot of play going on over there.
But if
they're trying to pivot to the anti-Muslim sentiment here.
Okay. And I don't have anything against Indians. I'm a yoga instructor for all.
Satanism. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I've been told that before. You worship Satan. I'm like, great, whatever. I feel great afterwards. Anyway, if they put J.D. Vance up with his Hindutva, she can't convert. Her family is very high in the Hindutva ladder. They know Modi. Wow. So that would be a severe insult to the Indian community. So she can't convert. Yeah. And you're on J.D. Vance with his Indian Hindu wife against Gavin Newsom? That's not good. You see what I'm getting at?
Oh, yeah. I see where you're going with this.
Erica's a really nice Christian woman. She's perfect. She's beautiful, blonde, blonde. Don't you see what she's doing? Charlie, everybody says now, nobody believes this, I hope. Charlie was going to be a president one day. Well, I am the one who knows Charlie the best, and I see those presidential qualities in J.D. Vance.
So if your theory, which I think was being floated around on the internet as well, are you thinking that J.D. Vance gets divorced, gets with Erica, and they become a ticket?
I think, now, I don't know if that's for certain. I think that that would be more acceptable to MAGA and America First than a J.D. Vance Hindutva Indian wife ticket.
I agree with you. I think, I don't know how much of a political scandal it would cause, but then again, who cares? In this day and age when everybody's grabbing them by the pussy and, you know, who cares? You can, you know, prostitutes, whatever, Epstein Island, everything's kosher for the ruling elite. It doesn't matter. You just get divorced, get remarried, and everything.
Right.
You know,
we're losing you a little bit.
Again, Christians, why not?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Now, I took this clip because I want you to fact check it, but here's J.D. Vance. This is great. He goes off on a tangent about Christianity.
Work within the political constraints that we have. Now, here let me just say something about this. And you know, somebody asked me earlier about my Christian values. And one of the points I made is that when the settlers came to the New World, they found a very widespread child sacrifice. I imagine there are some people who don't agree with my view on the pro-life issue. Let me just make an observation. If you go to historical archaeological sites where there were brothels, and the two oldest businesses in the world are gambling and prostitution, so there were brothels even in very ancient civilizations. If you go back to ancient brothels and you dig up the bones of the women who are working in these places, you will very often find a lot of children who were buried with them. And the answer is that whenever a society decides to discard innocent babies, they also don't treat their women very well. And whenever a society mistreats its women, it is very often the babies who come right after that. There is a reason why Christian civilization ended the practice of child sacrifice all over the world, and it's one of the great accomplishments of Christian civilization. I believe that we should try to be protecting every unborn life. There's a question of exactly how we do it, but I would never say that anyone's life, right to life, should be sacrificed. Thank you, man.
Can I just say, motherfucker, you just killed 100,000 kids in Gaza. You killed over 1 million kids in Iraq during the sanctions regime in the 90s. You killed how many untold millions of kids throughout all of these wars and regime change operations since the end of World War II? Not to mention the millions of kids that you killed. Forget about child sacrifice. What a load of horse shit. I studied archaeology. I studied anthropology. There's
somebody said the bones are with the brothels. Yeah, they all died together in the brothels. You just dig them.
First of all, sacrifice as a phenomenon in the Americas was very particular to certain groups. It was not that all widespread. And if it did happen in certain tribes, it had a whole different meaning. But okay, beyond that, these motherfuckers were doing the Inquisition and saying, oh, it's holy because we're killing Jews and Muslims and those who converted but were fake converts. And now they're going after so-called human sacrifice, which, by the way, was a caricature anyway for the New World. But I want you to go dig up in the Vatican where they actually have found the bones of discarded children and things like that.
I won't stand for anti-Catholic.
It's not anti-Catholic. It's just a historical fact because the Medicis and those types, you know what they were up to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Vatican was not the most holy of places, let's be honest, in that time period, in medieval and then Renaissance Italy, or the Vatican city-state and the papal state. So in that case, I just want to say, they always use this bullshit about, oh, the children. Meanwhile, they have no problem killing black and brown children around the world and bombing everybody in the Middle East. Russian kids in Donbass, Russian kids in Kursk, no problem. Send the this, send the that. Now they want to go kill Venezuelan kids. You see, it's total baloney. It's the same argument that this Bush-era woman came and gave at Dartmouth. And I stood up at the end and she was telling about pro-life. I said, you're not pro-life. You're pro-American babies who are white and in your neck of the woods, in the neocon camp. Every other baby is up for sacrifice. And it's up for sacrifice of war and profit and oil and you name it. And the crowd went nuts, of course, turned beet red, as she should, because she helped the Bush administration carry out multiple illegal wars. We remember at the beginning of the war on terror. So I just want people to understand that this whole pro-life, if you're pro-life, be pro-life. And pro-life means no death penalty, no war, no this, no that, no harming. Take up your cross and go to Golgotha and don't. That's a real pro-life. But there's other stuff where they're like, oh, the children. Meanwhile, they're killing children in Gaza. Please. The hypocrisy is just seeping and oozing from these people.
Don't you see that they're actually juxtaposing Christianity with some sort of violence very often these days? Like, it's like Christianity is the only thing that can stop this sort of violence. It's very like crusader-esque. Just Pete Hegseth just is dripping all over this stuff. That's how that's the vibe I get. Well, anyway, at the same event, J.D. Vance throwing his wife right under the bus and screeching about Christian child sacrifice or something. I have no idea. The Groypers, this is a shout out to Nick Fuentes and the Groypers, only because the Groypers are invading these TPUSA events and asking these people the questions that that should be asked. So here's J.D. Vance on a question, fielding a question about Israel.
I'm a Christian man, and I'm just confused why that there's this notion that we might have owe Israel something, or that they're our greatest ally, or that we have to support this multi-hundred-billion-dollar foreign aid package to Israel to cover this, to quote Charlie Kirk, ethnic cleansing in Gaza. I'm just confused why this idea has come around, considering the fact that not only does their religion not agree with ours, but also openly supports the prosecution of ours.
Yeah, so let's say a few things about this. First of all, when the President of the United States says America first, that means that he pursues the interests of Americans first. And that is what the president believes, is that Israel, sometimes they have similar interests to the United States and we're going to work with them in that case. Sometimes they don't have similar interests to the United States. And this example, the most recent Gaza peace plan that all of us have been working on very hard for the past few weeks, the president of the United States could only get that peace deal done by actually being willing to apply leverage to the state of Israel. So when people say that Israel is somehow manipulating or controlling the president of the United States, they're not controlling this president of the United States, which is one of the reasons why we'd be able to have some of the success that we've had in the Middle East. Now, you ask about, you know, sort of Jews disagreeing with Christians on certain religious ideas. Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the realities is that Jews do not believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. Obviously, Christians do believe that. There are some significant theological disagreements between Christians and Jews. One thing I really, really care about is the preservation of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. Christians believe that that is the site where Jesus Christ was crucified, and also that his tomb is right there as well. My attitude is, if we can work with our friends in Israel to make sure that Christians have safe access to that site, that's an obvious area of common interest. I am fine with that. What I'm not okay with is any country coming before the interests of American citizens. And it is important for all of us, assuming we're American citizens, to put the interest of our own country first. That's what we're going to do. That's what we try to do every single day. I promise you. Thank you.
I hate him. I hate him. I like Trump and I hate him. I just do not. He can't even answer the question. What do we care about the Church of the Holy Sepulchre right now? Like, that is so minor in the grand scheme of things when we're talking about Israel. That's your win with Israel? They let you go to the church?
And by the way, he went to the wall and then he went to the church because everybody was complaining about the wall all the goddamn time.
Yeah, exactly.
So he has that Ivy League kind of like elitist vibe to him, doesn't he?
And he has that yucky Catholic vibe. That like, when you grow up cradle Catholic, it's just not, you're not like, oh, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's very self-righteous. It's a Protestant vibe. It's like an evangelical vibe. I don't know.
And first and foremost, I just want to say Church of the Holy Sepulchre is governed by the majority in the Orthodox Church. So thanks very much, the Greek Orthodox.
Yeah, and that's strange. It's interesting. You got to come to agreement with the Jews about the Church of the Holy Sepulchre when it's really literally lorded over by the Orthodox community who you refuse to protect from Israel.
That's true, actually. Absolutely. I hope when it comes time, when the lease is up for the land that the Knesset is built on, which is Greek Orthodox land, and Israel has to move its parliament, because I'm hoping that we can petition the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate to have them get rid of the Knesset, I'll see where America stands on that.
Right, you know, exactly.
The property rights plus the Greek Orthodox Christian community.
Literally.
No. Let's see.
Well, speaking of Israel and special treatment, really quickly, a bombshell article came out in the American Conservative, which I hate the name of this periodical because I love the periodical so much. And I'm like, I'm not reading the American Conservative. But FBI uses a secret threat category for Israeli criminals operating in the United States. This is a great graphic by Gen X Girl. But I implore you guys to read the article. Leaked FBI records and court filings detail widespread money laundering, taxpayer theft, and drug smuggling enterprises operated in the U.S. by Israeli citizens connected or belonging to Israeli crime groups. Despite the trickle of prosecutions over the past 25 years, the FBI has never publicly disclosed the fact that it has designated resources allocated to investigating these criminal organizations. These syndicates operate in major U.S. cities. They engage in money laundering, drug smuggling, disaster relief, and tax fraud, PPP fraud, and espionage. There's no public crackdown, and they're exempt from the visa restrictions that target other global gangs like the Yakuza or MS-13. These are leaked FBI files that show that IBOCS, operating in Florida, Nevada, New York, and California, with crimes ranging from tax fraud to narcotics. And the State Department is not authorized to block their visas. This is you just find, like, every week we just find another instance of something that's like more sinister than the last. But so that was just something quick I just kind of wanted to touch on before I got to the even larger report that I think kind of went a bit under the radar because of the Erica Kirk hug and all of the other insane things that are happening this week. But I found it incredibly interesting and I want to dive into it. It was in the Atlantic. Top Trump officials are moving on to military bases. I thought this was kind of interesting. So the article documents at least six senior Trump officials are now living in military housing, and these are homes previously reserved for generals and senior officers. Of the people that have moved so far are Stephen and Katie Miller. Now, this is really interesting. Stephen and Katie Miller, they have cited weeks of targeted harassment from a group called Enough, which is the Arlington Neighbors United for Humanity, have been writing chalk messages on their sidewalk. And then they said that the harassment accelerated after Charlie Kirk's death. A lot of these stories you'll be see are Charlie Kirk's death, blah, blah, blah. I think his location has not been revealed. Katie says that their house was doxxed and they have put their Arlington home up for sale, $4 million. Tulsi Gabbard asked to be moved and she was declined. She asked to be moved. She didn't cite any public harassment, but she was declined housing at Fort McNair due to space limitations. Here's the ones that did move. Both Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio, Christine Noem, and then Dan Driscoll. So Christine Noem, she moved into the Coast Guard Commandant's home at Joint Base Anacostia-Bowling. I think her address was doxxed in the Daily Mail. Marco Rubio has cited bipartisan security threats, meaning from both sides of the aisle. Now he lives on General's Row at Fort McNair next to his neighbor, Pete Hegseth. The Army was stuck spending $140,000 on renovations to Pete Hegseth's General Row home at Fort McNair. And Army Secretary Dan Driscoll is shacking it up with his buddy at a frat house over on Joint Base Meyer Henderson Hall. He lives with another official that is not named. Just why the Army is now complaining that their spaces, so many senior officers have requested, officials have requested housing that some are now encountering a familiar DC problem, the inadequate supply. So we now, but here's the thing. I'm not buying this. Okay, if the fact that Tulsi Gabbard was declined means this isn't an emergency, it's not security. Their safety is not at risk. Because if their safety was at risk, the entire families would be on the bases, and they're not. And Tulsi was declined or denied relocation.
Uh-huh.
Well, put your tinfoil hat on for a little bit. I've come up with some theories, which soft coup preparation. Green Zone Optics, Security Theater as a pretext for a purge, preparing for civil unrest, or more consolidation of power. But I think that them moving on to these bases is very important, and people didn't really get to talk about it because the Atlantic sucks. And because of all the crap that was going on this week, that was much more riveting, I guess. So
can we, I really think it's important. Can we take, like, in your estimation, how likely are these five possibilities? I don't know. How would you sort of number them from one to five in terms of most likely to least likely? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I think there's a part of me that thinks that they're preparing something very large in terms of the Caribbean or Latin America, and they're afraid of the backlash that will come from maybe our Latino, Latinx, or whatever they call themselves, our Latino population. I don't know, though. I can't imagine what is this so serious that they feel the need to move on to these bases. What do you think?
I don't know. I the Green Zone Optics thing, of course, I think is always a prominent thing. And I think that it's very much...
we lost Chris.
I think that there is this preparation for civil conflict. The consolidation of power is always a big thing, I think. Soft coup preparation, of course, I think is one that should be looked at. But I think it's less likely, but a possibility nonetheless, I think.
And we'll just keep an eye on it. I think, this is a good time to segue to another reason why I think that they're hiding behind walls is because they can't explain what they're going to do in Venezuela. But here's, we lost Chris for a second, but that's okay. I'll play this clip. Here's Tulsi Gabbard talking about Venezuela.
The United States has a disastrous history of military intervention and regime change around the world, which has brought suffering to millions of people. It's bankrupted our country, dishonored our troops, and it's undermined our national security. We must end this policy now before we get into yet another military conflict, this time in Venezuela. Now, President Trump and his administration have already instituted heavy sanctions on Venezuela. They've doubled down on their position that all options are on the table. I wholeheartedly support the Venezuelan people as they fight for a free and fair democracy. But the United States should not be in the business of intervening, of picking who should lead their country, and we certainly should not be threatening military action. Venezuela poses no threat to the United States. Congress has not authorized the United States to go to war in Venezuela, and there's no justification for our country to violate the sovereignty of the Venezuelan people.
Just kidding. That's from 2019. The last time. But maybe that's why Tulsi isn't really in the in crowd. Maybe she still has some of these sentiments, or maybe they don't trust her.
Yep.
I mean, if you remember, Trump threw her under the bus with Iran.
He sure did.
Very, very interesting. But yes, that was Tulsi Gabbard in 2019. You could play it now. It's the same situation. It's just that Tulsi's the DNI.
So this week,
out in the Miami Herald, is that the U.S. is poised to strike military targets in Venezuela and escalation against Maduro regime. I hate that word. Also, Lindsey Graham came out, of course. I'll be going over Lindsey Graham much more this afternoon after the stream, but here's Lindsey Graham with a nice Tucker reaction.
Venezuela is now partnering with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is running out of money because Iran is weak. We're not going to sit on the sidelines and watch boats full of drugs come to our country. We're going to blow them up and kill the people that want to poison America.
We're going to kill people. You can see a little shiver of excitement go through his aging frame. We're going to kill people in Venezuela because Hezbollah in Lebanon. And obviously the security of southern Lebanon is a key American objective. There's probably not five people who voted for Donald Trump who didn't do so with the security of southern Lebanon in mind. Anyone who has any connection to Hezbollah must be invaded and killed, of course. And as you learned in school, the main funder of Hezbollah is, of course, Venezuela just have a lot in common. Language, religion, proximity. What?
But that's where we're at now. We're at Venezuela is funding Hezbollah now because Iran is too poor. Now, this gives you a twofold excuse. It gives the Americans an excuse to go into Venezuela, and it gives the Israelis an excuse to say Hezbollah's rebuilding, this time with Venezuelan drug money.
Oh, my God.
See what a mess? Like, you could just see the tangled webs they weave as they're like, it doesn't really work. In the sense of like, you have a geopolitical understanding, but I know that the Trump people are going to eat this up.
They love it.
They love
it. They love it. This is great.
This is great.
By the way, this is not the first time the Hezbollah links have been made. They were made under the first Trump administration as well. In 2019, when I was there, they also made that. By the way, most people don't know, there are 2 million Arab Venezuelans, most of whom come from Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Jordan. So therefore, because there are so many Arab Venezuelans and because Hugo Chavez called himself an Arab in heart and was very close to the Arab world and was with Gaddafi and Assad and everybody else and went to, obviously they're like, oh, it must be Hezbollah. They must have some alliance and things like that. No, they just have an easier visa regime for Lebanon so that Lebanese can come. Lebanese Christians, they have a big Orthodox church in Caracas. I don't know what they're looking for, but they're looking for this connection because this is what we've been talking about and what you rightfully pointed out over the past few weeks, the linking and connection of the war on drugs and the war on terror. Why not bring them both home at this point in our hemisphere?
So Pete Hegseth refused to confirm or deny that the United States was preparing strikes on Venezuela. They're all retarded anyway, so I don't know what to make of them. But we do have good news for Venezuela. We have been tracking Russian flights. Now, these flights are linked to a private company that has in the past mostly contracted with Wagner. So, I mean, I don't know if you want that kind of smoke, United States military, but I was in the United States military, and I don't want any smoke from Wagner. I just don't. Do you want to go into the jungles of Venezuela with Wagner?
I mean, first and foremost, those guys are hardcore. I just want American soldiers to find out, you know, they're eating cheeseburgers and things like that. Meanwhile, these guys were liberating Palmyra twice from ISIS.
Right.
So just want to let everybody know. And plus, they also are in the Donbass, in you name it. They're there. Central African Republic fighting in, who knows, Burkina Faso, in the Sahel region against. These are some real hardcore fighters. So, I mean, if the U.S. military with their lax standards and everybody's overweight and can't do PT tests, if they're ready to go into the Venezuelan jungle and fight both ex-FARC guerrillas and Wagner, who are going to make up a huge portion of probably some movement to counter the U.S., I mean, good luck.
We've been talking to Venezuelans, even just the militias alone number in the millions. So with Wagner training and a militia that's in the millions, I don't know. It just sounds quite formidable, but we'll keep going. So this Reuters article just dropped yesterday, which I this is another one you guys should read. It goes really in depth of the buildup near Venezuela. So Roosevelt Roads is a naval station in Puerto Rico. It's been dormant for like 20 years. It's now no longer dormant. It's reactivated. And they have fuel tanks, heavy vehicles, radar systems. So Puerto Rico will be your central staging ground at the Rafael Hernandez Airport and the former Roosevelt Roads Naval Station. They are hosting F-35s, V-22 Ospreys, 130 refueling tankers, C-17 cargo aircraft, and MQ-9 Reaper drones. This will be the launch pad for rapid deployment and air coverage. You see the Henry E. Rolson Airport in St. Croix. It's a secondary staging area with a shorter runway, but bombers and refuelers can utilize that. And you guys know about the heavy naval presence in the Caribbean and the Atlantic flanks surrounding the Venezuela Trinidad access. Reuters went even further in depth and started looking at the satellite pictures. Look at the construction that they're starting. So here is this taxiway. Taxiway is being extended at Roosevelt Roads base, which means that they're bringing in larger aircraft that previously couldn't land there and that couldn't do turnarounds. This is also from Roosevelt Road. So you can see the air buildup going on at Roosevelt Road. So you could see some B-22s, F-35s, and C-130s. We also have tactical field infrastructure. Tents are going up. The tents are close to the air, to the taxiway reconstruction. So the tents have access. So this means that these are for sleeping quarters for personnel and for rapid deployment and rapid logistics next to the flight line. Here we have the Reaper drone site, which is the Rafael Hernandez Airport at Aguadilla, Puerto Rico. Lots of drone activities. These images are from the 15th to the 19th, confirming the MQ-9 Reaper drone presence. Obviously, you guys know what Reaper drones are used for, which is ISR and precision strikes. And then moving on to the Virgin Islands, which is St. Croix, they rebuilt and then added on to a radar installation. These are images were from August and September, showing new radar systems installed, large-scale airfield construction, including fresh grading and new pavement. Who knows what that will be for? And then we see a huge amount of flights. Huge amount of flights. Rockwell B-1 Lancer flights. You guys saw that Boeing at B-52 Stratofortress. P-8 Poseidons are going up and down. You know, those are for patrol and reconnaissance. C-17 Globemaster flights for, obviously, for cargo and personnel movements. So that's kind of why I put this section right after the section of them moving behind the walls of the military bases. I think something big is happening.
There's certainly movement. I mean, there was this kind of movement before Iran, right? And we were like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And there was that kind of Diego Garcia, remember, out there. There was movement of all sorts of U.S. military vehicles and aircraft into the GCC countries surrounding that area. I just think that at the very least, this is preparations for further American involvement, even if it's kinetic only in the Caribbean. But I think that we're going to see kinetic action, not only in Venezuela, possibly across the border in Colombia as well. And that could be expanded, of course. I mean, we could, if this stuff, I want to put on the tinfoil hat here. And this is my tinfoil hat. I've been talking with people in Moscow. There's a scenario where United States does a kinetic strike, takes out the leadership of Venezuela, and a few possibilities emerge. But one of the possibilities that emerges, which I think is very interesting, is the Bolivarian military takes command, institutes martial law, and goes after the US-backed portion of the society and uses the entire Bolivarian militia and FARC and who knows, Wagner and internationals, to basically do a sort of like Sangun style Venezuela. Like basically, we're under military. Basically, if you take Pinochet and invert it to the left wing, we could see that in Venezuela, theoretically, at this point. I think that would be a very interesting scenario, because it would be the revolution on steroids. It would be like my picture of Chavez in like military uniform, ready to go. If that were to happen, I think that we would see a protracted war with the United States, but I think the United States would be ill-advised to bring in ground forces in that kind of war. First of all, they don't know the terrain, and necessarily a lot of U.S. troops are no longer trained in jungle warfare as they were back in the day. There is jungle warfare school opened up again, but it's not at the levels as it was in the Cold War. And number two, there are thousands of former members of FARC, not to mention the National Liberation Army, the Ejército Liberación Nacional, from Colombia, that are Marxists or Marxist aligned, that have come to Venezuela and have lived there in peace since a peace agreement was reached with FARC. And some of the other ELN members have come over as well. Some are still fighting in Colombia. But in any case, there are thousands of well-trained, well-disciplined forces there ready to go. So the scenario isn't only that Maduro falls and the country goes to the right wing. There could be a situation where a military command takes control and transforms the country into one of like a revolutionary military vanguard at the forefront. It could happen. Simón Bolívar and that whole legacy still reigns supreme there. But ultimately, I think that the United States is playing with a dangerous game here, thinking that somehow all of Venezuelan society will somehow become pro-American, because I think the patriotic sentiments of Venezuelans will overshadow PSU. That's why I think the most likely scenario is a military takeover of a united front versus just the PSU remaining as the sole power or in a coalition. I think that it could be something far more patriotic and far more militaristic that will try to defeat U.S. aggression in Venezuela and in neighboring Colombia.
I agree. And guys, so keep an eye on this region. And just so you know, the Ford Carrier Strike Group left Gibraltar, I believe, on the 29th. And I think it's a 10-day sail. So keep an eye on that region. And we'll keep an eye on the Russian flights. But speaking of Russian flights, Russia has been flying an ungodly amount of flights into Iran for very interesting locations. I'm sure that makes Chris incredibly happy. We've been tracking some of these since July. I mean, they were from the 12-month war, or the 12-day war. Finally, a journalist, thank you, whoever this wonderful hijabi is, this woman, she finally asks Lavrov about it.
Caught an independent journalist. Two questions. First, on Iran and Palestine. Second question. On Iran.
Did Russia supply S-400 to Iran, and what of the deal with the Sukhoi aircraft? Have they arrived to Iran? In regards to our military and technical cooperation with Iran, we have no limits in regards to our military technical cooperation since the restrictions have expired. And we are currently engaged in the supply of those equipment that is required.
We saw yaks. So we did see yaks in Iran, which are obviously the trainers. And they're asking about Sukhoi and S-400s. And Lavrov says, we're giving them everything they need.
Perfect. I'm a fan. Very happy. Thank you very much, Russia.
I'm going to try to get through this for Aria. This is the Pokrovs update, which I have not been paying attention to because I'm just at this point where I'm like, Russia's just going to win. Why do I have to pay attention to the intricacies of what's going on the ground? But here's your Pokrovs map. You can see that crazy cauldron forming right there. In the center, according to the Russian Defense Ministry, all 11 paratroopers involved in a landing from this incredible, and I have a video of it, this incredibly ridiculous counteroffensive publicity stunt, something along those lines. Russian forces continue advancing on several fronts near Pokrovsk. Troops are tightening the encirclement from the east, expanding control in the northern, eastern, and southeastern sectors of Mernogrod, and have cleared 26 buildings. 9 Ukrainian attacks were repelled as Kiev's troops attempted to break out of the encirclement. Around 140 Ukrainian fighters were eliminated, 3 armored vehicles and 2 pickup trucks destroyed, and 2 servicemen captured. This video, Zelensky has got to get these guys out of this video or out of this cauldron. But I think, again, we're just going to get a lot of videos. Here's a part of the stunt and some of what's going on in that cauldron in Pokrovsk. We'll be right back. I mean, this is just incredible. It's incredible work. Like, who planned this operation and what is the point?
I mean, I'll have more news on Wednesday, but I can tell you that clearly the Ukrainian military is absolutely incompetent with a lot of its commands and rife with corruption, rife with a lot of ills within the command structure. And I would say that I think it was also in Pokrovsk. I heard something today. I got to verify it. But I heard of an operation where helicopters were brought in to evacuate somebody important from the encirclement. So we should investigate this for our Wednesday stream. But I was told that somebody, there was an operation, and they think it was, people here are telling me, they think it was a Western technical advisor from a NATO country who was in Pokrovsk. They have the intelligence. I'm not sure. We've got to take a look at this and see what we find in open sources. But that they went in there and evacuated them. So I assume that evacuated that person and everybody else can just go to the meat grinder at this point. They don't care. There's more on that on Wednesday. But ultimately, I think that everybody is going to be sacrificed there. And there's no evacuation that's really going to take place on a mass level.
Well, there goes Chris leaving you with a cliffhanger. So you'll have to tune in on Wednesday and we'll have tons of footage and tons of news from the front, some part of the front, all parts of the front. But we'll go from no new wars to some new wars to all the new wars. This is so exciting. Trump now threatening Nigeria. If the Nigerian government continues to allow the killing of Christians, the USA will immediately stop all aid and assistance to Nigeria and may very well go into that now disgraced country, guns a-blazing, to completely wipe out the Islamic terrorists who are committing these horrible atrocities. I am hereby instructing our Department of War to prepare for possible action. Blah, blah, blah. Cherished Christians! Okay. So, we get that. Immediately following, Pete Hegseth, quote, tweets it, or he actually posts a screenshot, because that's a true social post. Pete Hegseth posts a screenshot and says, "Yes, sir, the killing of innocent Christians in Nigeria and everywhere must end immediately. The Department of War is preparing for action. Either the Nigerian government protects Christians or we will kill the Islamic terrorists who are committing these horrible atrocities." Okay, I like it. I want to protect Christians, right? Okay, what about the Palestinian Christians? Oh yeah, we'll get to that, but let's focus on the Nigerian Christians right now. So I said, well, I know they don't give a shit about the Christians even in America, so let's see what this is actually really about. Nigeria is number 6 on the world watch list for Christian persecution. Yes, that estimated 5,000 to 7,000 Christians have been killed in 2025. But that's not in Nigeria. That's worldwide. not a very large number worldwide. They're saying 60 to 70% of those are committed in Nigeria. Groups involved are obviously Boko Haram, who I'm pretty sure we armed and funded. So there's that. ISWAP, Nigeria only receives about $1 billion a year in U.S. Aid. And Trump previously designated Nigeria as a country of particular concern. I went and looked into these killings, guys. The videos are horrific. I don't recommend them. The Sudan and Nigeria, after watching Palestine, even it's horrific. It's nightmarish what these people are going through. Most of the people are Muslim that are being killed. I've looked into this. Most of them are being killed, and then the Christians that were killed, it was something that has to do with the case of mistaken identity. So I started to look even further, because I don't really deal well with Nigeria that much. They remind me of the Ukraine of Africa in a way. They kind of do the ECOWAS thing, and I've sort of stayed away from them because of that. But so I started digging. Oh, what's this? Oh, wow. Nigeria is about to have the world's largest oil refinery. That's crazy. 1.4 million barrels a day, giving itself oil sovereignty, going from 650,000 barrels per day to 1.4, which will make it the largest global refinery. The expansion will generate 65,000 jobs. Over 85% of this workforce is required to be from Nigeria. It covers a land area of approximately 2,600 hectares, six times the size of Victoria Island. Recently, they hit a new milestone, 70 million liters of fuel per day. While this is a huge milestone in and of itself, this made Nigeria completely oil sovereign. They no longer need to import anymore. No longer importing. This is more than their entire domestic need. They had previously been spending $10 billion a year importing refined fuel. No more.
No more.
No more. It's the Dangote Group. Spokesmen say, we are stabilizing the Naira, which is Nigeria's currency, securing national energy, and ending Africa's dependence on foreign fuel.
I heard that before. I heard an African leader talk about this before, maybe a few of them.
Not even that. The Dangote is building their own pipeline, and they want to export across the continent. They said, quote, this could transform Africa's entire energy ecosystem. Nigeria will become the first net exporter of refined fuel. This is also a CNG power distribution fleet, which makes it one of the most cost efficient and lowest emissions. It's a 21st century, they're calling it a 21st century energy juggernaut. More decolonization across Africa, especially Western Africa. There's your map. We know our beloved Chris was just in Burkina Faso. Look at the geography of the region. Who else has recently decolonized? Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali's in the process. Chad is kind of on the brink. Americans can't get into Niger and Burkina Faso. Where can they get into? They can get into Nigeria. They can get into Nigeria and they can disrupt this entire thing.
And then from there, they can go into Niger and Burkina Faso. It can use Nigeria as a staging ground, right?
Exactly. The Christians are the excuse, right?
Exactly.
The Christians are the excuse. AFRICOM has been asking for people to volunteer for deployments. I just heard from a military friend. You really? Can volunteer to go to the Horn for right now. Yes. I'm guessing they're going to Djibouti. I think this article came. Yeah, this is from today. This is also scary. Nigeria says, you can help against this Islamic insurgent problem, but you have to respect our foreign policy. This is a bad idea. If anybody from the Nigerian government is listening, stop what you are doing right now. Do not let them in. They will not respect your sovereignty.
No respect for sovereignty.
No. They said, we will welcome U.S. assistance as long as it respects our sovereignty and territorial integrity.
Both of which the United States doesn't respect ever.
So, I mean, I don't even know what to tell you guys. All eyes on Venezuela, all eyes on Nigeria, some all eyes on Ukraine. No new wars.
This is why we Greeks have a saying, "Ta matia sou dekatesera," which means your eyes 14, because you can never have too many eyes on all of the conflicts and issues, not only in our families, but around the world.
Guys, don't forget, the president of Nigeria is Tinubu, who is an American heroin trafficker married to a Christian. He's a Muslim married to a Christian. So there's, you know, they've got their bases covered. So maybe this is just getting the private sector back in line. I'm not sure. I'd have to look further into what Tinubu's up to, but he's a terrible person and a terrible president. But this Dangote guy seems pretty cool. He's Africa's richest man. I looked into his background a tiny bit, but he seems to be a little bit of a Pan-Africanist in the sense of enterprise. He wants to be able to continentally expand his business, which I don't know enough about him, but from what I could see and glean so far, it's a positive thing, at least for the Western region and the Sahel.
Absolutely.
And Africa can't have nice things.
No, of course. Please. So
we got to go in there and ruin it.
So. Absolutely. It's ours. We have to liberate it.
We got to liberate your oil.
You gotta liberate your oil.
You gotta liberate your oil. Well, Chris, you're exhausted. I did it in an hour.
You did it.
I did it in an hour. I have good news. I didn't cover it on the stream because I'm going to have a space in an hour with Nathaniel. We will be covering the Republican Jewish Congress. Oh, Chris, it was delicious. You have got to go look at these clips. They're insane. They're calling Tucker Carlson the most dangerous anti-Semite in the country. If Tucker is the most dangerous anti-Semite in the country, I need to leave now. I gotta get out.
There's no salvation for you. You gotta get out.
We will talk about that in an hour. I will let Chris go to bed, and we will be back on Wednesday with all of Chris's surprises from the war front and the good news from Russia. Thank you, guys, and we will see you next stream. Go to ddgeopolitics.com and buy a t-shirt. Love you. Bye.